This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash and an anonymous donor. Good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Lori, and it's so good to see you back there at behind the mic. It's back to normal.
Back in the saddle after a lovely Thanksgiving holiday.
I'm glad to hear that, but now it's back to reality.
Yes, it is.
Here it is. So back to the salt mine. Well, listen, you know, it's been a very interesting week in the past, and I want to cover some of the things that have happened. This whole business with Elon Musk. What's gone on with the protest in China and Iran. Certainly want to talk about the Herschel Walker election coming up. And then if we have some time, I'd like to be able to talk about the latest Alabama comprehensive assessments here in Baldwin County. Okay, we finally got a full picture of exactly where each school is, so that's allowed me to go back and do the usual analysis of, you know, who's where and where the percentages are, so everyone knows exactly what is taking place, okay? So if we have time, that's what I want to try to do. So let's go ahead and take a dive into what's going on with the whole Elon Musk issue, okay? Now, the argument basically here is that, as we've seen for the last several years, that big tech has been censoring conservative, you know, ideas, not allowing certain issues to be discussed, such as the origin of COVID, okay, such as the border, such as the efficacy of masks, okay, and the efficacy of the vaccines to begin with. So if there is this, I mean, a chilling effect on having any discussion about these issues, then we have some real problems. And I think that what Elon Musk did was to lift the cover underneath what has gone on in the Twitter world, okay? So what he ends up doing is releasing the various back and forth between, first of all, the Democratic National Committee in the 2020 election. Now, here you have collusion of the first order. I mean, they're working, and he shows these people, you know, saying, we need this to be covered, we don't want that to be covered, and then emails that show this was handled by the Twitter officials. I mean, it's pretty clear. They're smoking guns here. This isn't just some abstract problem, you know, some wacko conspiracy. It be real, okay? And so, now we have hard evidence of what we've all known has been taking place, okay? So now the question is, now that Twitter has been exposed, what's next? That's one question. A second question, and one which Miranda Devine, who I would recommend you all just Google her. It's Miranda, D-E-V-I-N-E. She writes for the New York Post. And she probably is the most knowledgeable of the journalists that have been involved with the whole business of the cover-up of the laptop, the Hunter Biden laptop, and the Post story, and she broke this back in October of 2020, that the FBI had this laptop that was Hunter Biden's. It's got all sorts of incriminating evidence about corruption and money going to, quote, the big guy, you know, Biden himself. So all of that is something that I think you need to kind of dig into to take a look at this and put it into the perspective that shows that this isn't just a one-off, okay? This is systemic, and it is deep. And so the threats to, you know, your First Amendments may not necessarily be coming from the government. I mean, it's not like China, okay? But what they have been able to do, because the government wants only good news, okay, they've used a backdoor approach to censor anyone who disagrees with the issues I just mentioned, whether it's the border, whether it's vax, whether it's the origin of COVID. Woo, oh, no, we can't talk about that. Vaccine's great. Masks work. Blah, blah, blah. You say anything other than that, and then, as Tucker Carlson keeps saying, you're going to get canceled. You're going to get shut down. You're the bad guy. You're a racist. You're a fearmonger. You're a conspiracy nut. Blah, blah, blah. So here we are. This is a crossroads one can argue in terms of trying to save the First Amendment and save the country. And why do I say save the country? Because if we don't have counter ideas out there showing what's right and what's wrong, then how are we, as, you know, voters, supposed to make decisions? Well, of course, the Democrat Party and the radical left don't care about any of that. They just want the power. So any means to get the power is fine with them. So if you're going to stuff, you know, the drop boxes in Georgia like they did, if you are going to misuse the drop boxes like the Supreme Court in Wisconsin said they did, and if you are just going to manufacture ballots, which we all saw happening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, okay, then all of a sudden, it's not just conspiracy theory. There's hard evidence. And you're seeing it once again, where? In Maricopa County in Arizona. Okay? So, you know, they want to label us as conspiracy theorists, deniers, and all like that. And you're damn right we're deniers. Why in the world should we buy into the idea that the 2020 election wasn't stolen? I'm sorry, I just don't get that. And I'm not going to repeat all the things that we've talked about for the last 2 years about this, but you know the deal, okay? There was enough of this stuff happening that you could tell something was wrong, okay? And the classic example was good old Georgia, where Stacey Abrams forced that consent decree and Kemp and Raffensperger did nothing to stop it. They let it happen. At least here in Alabama, when the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, basically challenged what John Merrill was doing in terms of voter IDs here, he fought it at the Supreme Court, and we won. Raffensperger and Kemp could have done the same damn thing, but oh no, they didn't. Okay, but now Kemp is a hero because he's working to get, you know, Herschel Walker elected, finally. Which is another topic which I'll talk to. But see how all of this works. Biden and them don't want, you know, any kind of criticism about what the hell they're doing. Can't talk about the Afghanistan botch up. Oh no. Twitter and all of them just cut off that. So, again, as like I suggested to you here, what Musk has done has uncovered the swamp's effect on the whole political process. So, what the hell is the difference between what the Chinese are doing, what Stalin and Goebbels did in the Nazi period? I mean, it's all the same thing. And Goebbels was right. Just keep telling a lie enough times, people are going to start believing it. Yeah, Afghanistan was a great, great operation. One of the best operations. I mean, I'm not just, you know, throwing that out there. That's what they said. They want you to believe that crap. I'm sorry. It just doesn't wash. And thank goodness Musk is stepping up to the plate. Now, here's the problem that Devine put out there. She was asked, do you think there's going to be any pushback on him based on what he's done? And she said, it's already started. Because there are things that he didn't mention that she did mention. Because she has looked at another issue that's gone out there, which is the fact that Missouri and Louisiana sued the Biden administration over exactly what we're talking about here. Suppression and censorship. And so, the Devine was able to point out that if Musk is going to continue to do what he's doing, he may very well run into some problems, you know? Because guess what? Biden's Chinese buddies, they don't want all of this coming out. I mean, they've got Biden, you know, by the you-know-what. And so, why would they want Musk to continue to, you know, dribble all this stuff out and make it more difficult for them to do things? So, I mean, the likely thing would be, hey, Musky boy, guess what? You want to keep producing Teslas over here? You want your batteries and all the rest of the crap that goes with it? You better start laying off. So we'll see where this goes. But, you know, regardless of whether or not there's anything more forthcoming, the real key is going to be the degree to which the Republicans, when they take Congress on January 3rd, take the House. And I heard Kevin McCarthy on Maria Bartiromo's show yesterday. McCarthy says there's going to be a select committee on China. They are going to have investigations over the big tech censorship issue. Okay? So, I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, that's all they want to do is investigate. Well, I mean, it seems like they can walk and chew gum at the same time and come up with some policy recommendations and try to get things passed that will make a difference in terms of inflation and anything else that you want to talk about, like the border. So I think they have to do investigations. I mean, I know oversight is just sort of a buzzword, but in this particular case, it's not just a buzzword. It's essential. I mean, if the First Amendment is under attack by the back door through the big tech people, which it is, then why the hell are they not supposed to investigate it? And why are they not supposed to, you know, do what's necessary to protect our First Amendment? So, I mean, look, I've been down this road with everybody before. You know, the Republicans don't always deserve our support. I get that. But in this particular case, let's hold their feet to the fire. And I've heard one thing that McCarthy and them have promised in terms of dealing with runaway budgets. And yet that's not something that really came out in any of his interviews that we've seen. One good thing that did come out is that evidently he's got Biden agreeing to stopping the vaccine mandates for the military in the next National Defense Appropriation. We'll see how that comes out. Supposedly next week Biden's agreed to do it. But then I just saw that, you know, Secretary of Defense Austin is saying, yeah, mandates are still going. So look, whatever it is, a typical political BS, okay? You don't know anything until it actually happens. So let's see. But that's a good test for McCarthy. If he's able to do that and they actually back off the vax mandates, so that's not a bad thing, all right? So we'll see how that works, okay? Let's shift to, I've mentioned China, so let's talk about China again, all right? The questions pertaining to the First Amendment issues that we were just talking about do include a Chinese connection, okay? And that connection is through TikTok. It's through the Confucius, you know, the Confucius Institute, sorry, that they have, and we still have one at Troy University here, and we need to get rid of it, okay? We know from the FBI, and I mean, Christopher Wray, the FBI director, is no hero for the conservative movement, but at least he's willing to say that TikTok is a valued, you know, way for propaganda, Chinese propaganda, to be inserted into the American political system. Okay? So, I mean, this is where Governor Noem in South Dakota has basically told all of the people in the executive departments in her state, no more TikTok. Get off of it. We could do that. I mean, DeSantis has done something similar. Okay? Other states have started to move against it. Missouri and Louisiana, you know, mentioned earlier, have, you know, lawsuits against Biden. The point here is that if the feds are not going to defend our rights than our states can. But don't expect Ivy and them to do anything. I mean, she's got Chinese company in her home county. I mean, they're already in bed here. So how we work this out to see if Alabama's government will move in the same direction that some of these other states are to protect us from all of this business with China, I think is going to be one of the central issues that we'll see when the session starts, the legislative starts on March 7th. Okay, so here we are, though. China has these connections to this whole question about, you know, protecting the First Amendment. Okay, now here's where the whole question about what China does against its own people comes to the fore, because we've seen Xi now, you know, essentially emperor forever, appointed by the Communist Party. The party, following Xi's lead, has conducted these extreme measures to prevent COVID from spreading in China. Locking down everything. Whole cities. I mean, they just locked down Shanghai over the summer. And they're locking down another place. So these lockdowns have created a lot of stress within the population. Sort of like a tinderbox, okay? So what was the match that went into the tinderbox? Evidently, there was a fire in one of these towns. And they botched the fire and people were killed. And that created a protest there that all of a sudden went viral. And the next thing you know, you've got dissidents not only talking about the botched fire, but now how their lives have been ruined by these lockdowns. And, I mean, you've seen the images on TV. It's there. It's real. Okay? And I would argue that at this particular juncture, if we had a real CIA, as Bill Buckley used to say, then perhaps we could be helping the dissidents in some way to do the same kinds of things that Reagan did when the Poles were in uprising mode in 1988 and 89, which was to provide funds for the Gdansk workers to stay on strike, which was to provide funds to run off leaflets and pamphlets and all the rest of that stuff. Okay? Now, we're in a different technological world, so what's the way our government could help the dissidents in China today? Well, maybe Biden could tell Apple, make sure that the dissidents have the opportunity to use all of your features. This drop feature, which allows an individual to drop information to a specific phone, is something which is extremely important because everything else is shut down in China. And so, what does Apple do, though? Apple shuts down its own feature that essentially allows the dissidents to coordinate and keep the fires going. Now, why is it that Apple would kowtow to the Chinese? I mean, this is a dumb question. Why do you think? They're making $74 million. That was their profit from China last year. So, I mean, do you think for a minute that Tim Cook, Robertsdale High School graduate, is going to risk this amount of money? Of course not. But you see, here again, you know, I think Lenin was right. You know, he basically said, the communists are going to sell the capitalists the rope that we're going to hang you with. And that's exactly what Apple is doing over there. You know, The fact of the matter is you have a situation where these American tech companies and other American companies are underwriting the ability of China to do what it needs to do in terms of providing money for its Belt and Road and providing money for the growth of, you know, the Chinese military. All right? I mean, so let's step back one just a little bit here. All right, so at the 30,000-foot level here, all of a sudden, even the Biden administration is saying China is an adversary. At least some elements of that are. So China's an adversary. The Chinese people are protesting, as we haven't seen since Tiananmen Square. The Chinese government is rocked with all this because this isn't just Hong Kong, okay, protesting as we've seen. No, this is the whole country. And so, what should we be doing? Simple answer, we should be supporting it as much as we can. And yet, the PR person, the spokesman for Biden's National Security Council, retired Admiral Kirby, who was the Defense Department's spokesperson, you know, what does he say? We are not taking sides. I mean, is that a BS answer or what? How can we not, quote, take sides? He gives this dumb answer that basically says, oh, look, we always support, you know, freedom of speech and all like that. Right. Right. But you're not going to call the Chinese out. You're not going to do anything to rock the boat because the Biden people are compromised, number one, and number two, they don't dare. They don't dare call them out for fear of what the Chinese can release. That would be compromising to the nth degree. Of course, we already know how they're compromised, okay? The Hunter Biden laptop shows us that. There's so much evidence out there for the compromise theory to be validated, okay? So you have this foreign policy establishment that Biden's team, you know, is in place running. And what are their ideas? I mean, don't you think it goes right back to the Obama argument? And I've said this before here. You know, American foreign policy is the source of the world's problems. Okay? And if that's your general outlook, then sure. You know, let's just back America away from various commitments. Let's not, you know, get entangled here and there. And you're saying to yourself, well, Trump was trying to get us disentangled. Yeah, I got that. Okay. It's a different issue, though. Not getting entangled in the Iranian protests is essentially because it's more important for Biden and his team to do what? To get back on track with the Iranians for, you guessed it, the failed nuclear deal. That's all they care about. They could care less if that poor woman was killed in protest and then all of a sudden the country is erupting against the mullahs. They don't care. They're afraid to come out on there. Not because they're compromised on, you know, corruption issues, but because they are compromised ideologically. So you've got these kinds of situations that are there in terms of foreign policy management. So China and Iran are just rife with protests. What should we be doing? It seems to me that we should be doing as much as we can to support those people and moving forward towards, dare I say it, regime change? Oh my God. I mean, just think about that. What would have happened if Tiananmen Square had worked out the way the dissidents wanted? You know? I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, Deng Xiaoping did take China on a different course. But all of that has gone past. There are the reforms that he made are now being shut down. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when Commander Cox was on with us. You know, Xi has installed a Leninist type government. They control everything. That's not what Deng Xiaoping was all about. And it certainly is not the direction most American liberals believed would happen if we supported China's economic growth, which is why Clinton moved in the direction to let them come into the World Trade Organization. The great hope was that once China began developing, then there would be spinoff in terms of democratic approaches. And to a degree, there was some loosening in terms of letting a hybrid-type capitalism come into being. And that worked. I mean, they've brought over 300 million people out of poverty. But what's the price? The price is the complete loss of freedom under the Communist Party rule. They can't afford to let things get out of control. And of course, the danger for them, because they're not legitimate, is that these kinds of protests are showing that the party doesn't work. It doesn't provide the kinds of, you know, living that people want. And again, last 20 years, they've been fine. You know, they had the mandate from heaven. But maybe that mandate from heaven was on extremely shaky grounds to begin with, obviously, I would argue. It takes the military and the police force of arms to keep things under control. All of a sudden, the match hit the tinderbox, and the next thing you know, it's in flames. That's all to the good. And if there could be a regime change, that would be to the good, too, in my view. All right, but will this government of ours move in that direction? It doesn't look like that. Not when their spokesman Kirby basically says, "We're not taking a side on that. We're not taking a side on that." Do you think Reagan would have done that? Last thing I remember him saying, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Take it down." That challenge was there. What are we saying now? I mean, we can't even come up with a coherent policy on Taiwan. I mentioned this when Commander Cox was on. You know, strategic ambiguity. Strategic ambiguity is nothing more than a prescription for letting the Chinese go so far that we're left with doing some sort of a reaction. Instead of having, again, like I've suggested to you before, we need a forward-deployed group of American Marines there that can protect Taiwan, number one, you know, buttress its ability to defend itself against air attack with the Iron Dome, which is a point that I've been making about, you know, for Ukraine right from the start. But the real issue is, with a Marine force there, it would trigger a response from the Americans. It would be a deterrent force that the Chinese would have to reckon with before they decided on a course of action that could lead to all sorts of bad things for them. Absent that, which is where we are today, why shouldn't Xi look towards, you know, what they did when Pelosi was there? Completely surrounding Taiwan with naval exercises, air exercises, as a prelude to, you know, an invasion. All I'm suggesting to you folks is that the left-wing radical arguments about who this country is, what we are, has taken hold in the American government at levels which are dangerous. And then when you factor in how the American business community has become woke in and of itself, and it's willing to do the kinds of bidding for the Democrats, as we have seen in terms of censoring through the big tech companies and other companies that are much more interested in profit than they are in the national interest of the United States, which is to prevail in this adversarial relationship with the Chinese. I mean, if that's not grounds for moving in a different direction here, and I think that Kevin McCarthy and Mike Pompeo both talked about, you know, if American business cannot find the wherewithal to move in a different direction in terms of supply chains overseas with China and other things like that. I mean, even Biden's talking about bringing back, you know, American business to America. Okay, fine. But he won't do anything about that. He can't. But McCarthy can. They can put plenty of public pressure. They may not pass legislation to that effect. Okay, I get that. But once the public starts seeing the Republicans taking steps that may not pass, but they are steps which lay the groundwork for 24 when we can take the presidency and get the Senate too. Those are thoughts that I think are worth having about what we need to be doing with the Iranians and the Chinese and these other, you know, dictatorships, so that we don't have our spokespeople like Kirby saying, well, we're not going to take any side in that. Really? I sure as hell hope that the Israelis are doing everything they can to support the Iranian people in their quest for freedom. I wish that we had a real CIA doing something similar, you know, with the Uyghurs, you know, arming them maybe, doing the kinds of things that would help the Uyghurs in their real fight against extermination in China. But we'll keep our eye out and see if anything changes, but we shall see. Okay? We shall see. And we are going to see on Tuesday, Lori, we are going to see whether or not Herschel Walker can pull it off and keep the Senate at a 50-50 tie.
Now, can't wait.
There's what?
Can't wait.
I can't wait either. Hopefully, the can't waiting will be in a positive outcome, unlike what we saw 2 years ago in Georgia. Okay? But the argument basically here is that Walker has a lot of issues, personal issues, that they've tried to exploit. That didn't seem to work in the primary, okay? Because you know, he was able to, I think it was 52-48, okay? But the polls that we've seen right now are, it's a dead heat. So if it's a dead heat, policy issues that he's been talking about, inflation, crime, the issue of the border, those kinds of things resonate with people, and according to the early voting, they're having record early voting, despite the fact that, you know, Georgia was called out for Jim Crow 2.0 by Biden and all those people when they passed their election law reforms a year and a half ago. So does that bode well for Walker? It does, but it also kind of hinges on what Governor Kemp has done. Now, Kemp, I think, won by about 200,000 more votes than what Walker got from the Republicans. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, those Republicans did not make the full commitment on the Republican slate. Okay, fine. But the argument now is that Kemp has moved in this direction to get his machine to help Walker. And if he does, and if the candidate from the Libertarians, you know, I think he got 80,000 votes, there's a group of people there that should be voting with Walker rather than with Warner. So we shall see.
Okay.
All right? So stand by, Lori. I'll call you Tuesday at night after the final results are in.
Please
we'll,
do.
We'll talk. Okay. All right. So all things being said about Georgia, one of the X factors is, well, what's happening with Trump? Trump supported Walker, but the Walker people think that Trump is a bit toxic, and so Trump has sort of stayed out of the whole race as far as, you know, rallies and things like that. Okay, I think he had one rally there earlier in the, well, probably towards the middle of the summer, if I'm not mistaken. All right, but that hasn't been replicated. So the question is, can Kemp's machine get enough votes to get Walker over the finish line? And like I said, we'll see tomorrow evening how all of that works out. Okay? All right. Now, I do have to kind of get out of here a little bit early today, so I want to do one more thing. I want to talk about education in Baldwin County. I'm going to just kind of concentrate on Baldwin County right now, and down the road we'll talk about the state's progress or lack of progress, however you want to term it, okay? But for Baldwin County, I mean, for all of these years that we've been trying to get rid of Common Core, we've also been working to try to move Baldwin County school system in the right direction, okay? And that has been an uphill struggle, okay? And my argument has been that as long as the state is wedded to Common Core, and as long as Baldwin County continues to move in that direction, then you are going to have a built-in problem in terms of dealing with especially math, which is the low-hanging fruit. Everybody hates it, and everybody knows why, okay? So in this particular case, what we've seen in terms of math has been an absolute disaster at the state level, where we were at 25th in the NAEP scores in 2010. 25th in math and in ELA, English Language Arts. By 2019, Lori, we were 52nd in math and 48th in ELA.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and oh, dear. Now, in 2022, we have come up a little bit, and I'm going to go into that in more detail, okay? But the fact of the matter is we are now like 40th in math and ELA, which certainly better than 52nd, but there are issues along the lines of, well, what does that really mean? So I want to come back and talk about that down the road. What I want to talk about this morning, though, is what about Baldwin County, okay? And so in 2021, if you look carefully at the data, Baldwin County had 9 schools in math in the teens in proficiency. Okay?
As in low or high?
Low. Okay.
Okay? Teens.
Teens.
Okay.
Okay? 10% in some of these schools were proficient at the level they were supposed to be at, okay? I mean, that's Baltimore. That's all of these inner city schools that don't function, okay? So 2021, 7 schools in the teens, 32 schools that are at 40 and below. Now,
could COVID have come into play there?
No. It was before then. The COVID wasn't an issue. The statistical analysis, if you look at it from 2015 to 2019, even up to 2021, there's no difference.
Okay.
Okay, it's all downhill. Excuse me. So what that meant was, in terms of 2021, was that while Alabama itself was in a crisis, so was Baldwin County. Okay? So 2022 comes along, and there has been some improvement. At this point, we have only 5 schools across the board in the teen range for proficiency. So that's two less. Obviously, we're happy with that, okay? And you only have 19 schools at 40 and below, whereas before I mentioned you had 32. So on the math front,
Improvement,
okay? The overall math number for Baldwin County in 2021 was 32, okay? Our proficiency rate was 32. It's now at 36, or 39 if you look at a different school. But 36 is the official number right now. So there has been improvement, 32 to 36.
Baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. And you've seen decline in the number of schools that are in teen proficiency, went from 7 to 2. Okay, so where does this take us? Well, it takes us to the point where common sense has been involved with the academic dean, and basically we feel comfortable with her game plan to try to bring this up, okay? And the academic dean here, Dr. Renee Carter, she understands the problem. She's told us that she has the money that she needs to fix the problem in terms of programmatic approaches where you need extra people to teach, you know, to help do those kinds of things. And I think that they are on the right track. She did speak to the math guru that our coalition has been working with to get rid of Common Core on the state level. Kathy Miller is her name. And I think that some of the issues that we've brought up, you know, Dr. Carter is willing to talk to Kathy about, and they've actually adopted some of Kathy's approaches to teaching math. In the absence of getting rid of Common Core, there are things that can be done. You can go back to times tables, to drills, things like that. And I think that's the direction we're going in, to try to help the students get a basic foundation in math and then deal with Common Core simultaneously.
So you're saying the county can make some changes,
yes,
on their
techniques,
own.
Techniques, tactics.
Regardless of,
right,
the state. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Good.
So that's one area that I think we're encouraged on. Here's another area that common sense has been involved with for about the last year and a half. And I really thank Robert Monk, who is the president, or South Baldwin chapter president, who took the bull by the horns in terms of analyzing the content of an important document that the fourth and fifth and sixth graders are using as their history. That's where they get their history learning from. Now think about this. No textbooks. It's called Studies Weekly. It's the same thing that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
We looked into that.
Yeah, right. Okay. So what Robert and his team have done is to examine the Studies Weekly for content. Okay? That content analysis has led to the team sending comments to Studies Weekly and getting back from Studies Weekly, you know, changes to their content. Now think about this, Lori. I mean, this is important. All right? Now, so the team is now in the final stages where they've got their analysis, they've got revisions, and now they've got a final interpretation that they've been able to provide to the State Board of Education and to the State Superintendent Mackey. Their next thing is to get involved with the school board down here and show them exactly why we are opposed to Studies Weekly. Okay? Now, it's going to be our responsibility to show them and convince them and also provide an alternative to Studies Weekly. Okay? And we're in the process of working that out. Now, I'm taking time on this for two reasons. Number one, it's important for everyone listening to understand what's happening in public school education. We cannot just walk away from public school education because we're going to throw our hands up and say, you know, To hell with all of it.
Did you clarify what is wrong with Studies Weekly for those that didn't hear the previous broadcast about this?
I did talk about it before. I mean, they're basically in bed with critical race theory, you know, the 1619 Project, all of the woke stuff, okay? Part and parcel of it. So here you have a situation now where if the school board here accepts our recommendation, and the school board here has the ability to choose what they want to do here, they don't have to have Studies Weekly. It's a test for them, and that's the second part of this. Content analysis. What are the kids really learning? You know? And if it's 1619 and CRT, and we've been told that's not what they're being taught, it's in Studies Weekly. They're influencing 4th, 5th, and 6th graders with all of this BS, and we want it stopped. Okay? So here again, your grassroots movement is the action, you know, it's the actor that's taking action, okay? The Republican Party's not doing a damn thing, okay? And this is where the old Dr. Liu comes out and said, this is the BS factor. These people, Kay Ivey and all the rest of them up there, they have kept, and Ivey had an opportunity to get rid of Common Core. Our team had worked with getting her an interview with Terry Lathan to get rid of it. We had a resolution ready for the board. We had 4 board members who were ready to say no to Common Core. She walked away from it. Summer of 2021, Terry Lathan met with her. She said, well, and I've said this on the radio before, I'm going to form a task force. They did form a task force. A-plus ran the task force and gave us the Numeracy Act. It didn't solve a damn thing. These Republicans who think that true Republicans, you know, are just wonderful, well, guess what? These are the people that we've been fighting for 10 years. The education establishment and the legislators who want Common Core because the BCA gives them money to keep Common Core. And yet, who suffers? The kids. That's the problem with all of this Republican crap that goes on and telling us, oh, the common sense people are just radical yahoos. You can't listen to them.
BCA?
Business Council of Alabama.
Why would they promote?
Well, that's a great question. We have never really been able to figure that out, except the last BCA president was Katie Britt. They're all in bed with Common Core, okay? Supposedly.
To what gain?
The gain is not necessarily in terms of getting kids educated. The gain is in getting the legislators to do what the BCA wants, okay? They don't want Common Core. They want to continue to move in this direction. And the spinoff is that if you support us with Common Core, then you're going to get the money that you need to get reelected. That's been the track record. So all I can say is we've tried to change it from the legislative side of the standpoint. We've tried to change it through Ivy with a team getting her to use the State Board of Education. I think that we're looking at moving towards getting about 5 or 6 of the influential school boards to see it our way, and maybe they can push on it. We'll see how it goes. We're not going to give up on legislation, but we're not at the point where we can be sure that it will ever, you know, come to pass. So, Lori, I am going to have to leave. It's the first time I've ever had the show where I haven't asked Lori for more time.
Exactly. He's,
well, that
he's
means
leaving
I can,
time
you're gonna
on the table.
Give me 5 extra minutes.
So I have to
time.
Give you credit.
All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, folks. Have a great weekend. Start getting your Christmas shopping done, Christmas spirit and all like that. You know, we were exhausted yesterday. We've got all the house finally decorated. I mean, when you get old, folks, it's just part of the game. You just get tired doing all that stuff. Well, but it's fun.
Thank you to you and the other volunteers in the grassroots efforts who, instead of retiring, are continuing to pursue efforts that you feel are so important for our future
generation.
Well,
thank you, Lori. We do try, and we're not going to give up. It's too important not to keep in the fight. So y'all take care. Talk to you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Liu from the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash, as well as an anonymous donor. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. We are now resuming regular programming.
Here we are, as in